This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row Studios, in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast.
It's not just any podcast.
It's our first podcast of spring.
It's also our first...
With the octogenarian,
yeah,
Davo.
With Grandpa Davo.
I've turned 50.
Grandpa Davo.
50.
Oh, happy birthday, love.
Oh, it was great. Oh. It's still going on, actually. The 2-month global celebration of my birthday continues. Off to Madrid tomorrow. Go and play a bit of golf. It's all good.
Oh, it's been a reflective time for you.
Has it?
Yeah, a little bit.
Been. Yeah, I suppose.
You can try and pretend it hasn't.
Okay, got it.
But this is the pod today in Inner Thoughts.
Yeah.
What wisdom have you got to impart to us from the mountaintop, Grandpa?
Well, from the conveyor belt, really. There's the conveyor belt. We've talked about it before, where especially when a man either has a son or loses a father, you become very aware of the conveyor belt. Fortunately, my father, Trev, is still with us, but I do have a son, George. And you do become very aware of your place on the conveyor belt as it moves inexorably towards the final whistle. I hate to break it to you. You're aware of the conveyor belt, but 50 is basically good. If you're feeling pretty good, you're feeling in shape, it's a great excuse to get whatever you want. You get to be set in your ways to say, look, I'm 50 now, I'm not taking any more bull. So it's good for that. It's very good for 50. I don't have that much life left. Although I keep on convincing my children I'm halfway to 100. I'm halfway through. But I know I'm not. It's a good excuse to say I don't have a lot of life left. I can't quite deal with that.
Do you feel that, by the way?
And you can be old.
Do you wake up in the morning and think, I do not have a lot of life left? Or
well,
are those
no,
just words?
I'm fortunate. My parents are 87 and 89 this year. And my parents are still with us. My dad's in particularly good health. Mum, not so much. But, they're going to live into their 90s. My grandparents lived until late in life. So
good innings.
So, yeah, good innings. So I feel like I've got a chance to make it deep into my 90s. I've got plenty of time left. But that's not what I'm telling people. Nobody listens to this podcast. It's fine.
George Orwell.
Yeah.
Last words in his personal diary.
Another good George.
He said, at 50, everyone gets the face they deserve.
Do I deserve this face?
I think you've got a gorgeous face, David.
We just did the thing on Instagram yesterday where we switched our faces, where Lexi took the picture of us and switched our faces. Check our Insta feed. It is pretty alarming what a combined Rog and Davo face looks like.
I think she put your buttocks on my face by the last of things. I'm not quite sure. I'm a bit confused about how I ended up like that. But your real face, David, it's gorgeous.
Thank you.
I'm only saying that because my youngest son, Ozzy, who's 5,
mm-hmm.
he thinks we're twins. He calls us the British twins. Sounds like a really bad 1950s duo.
Yeah, still like Schwarzenegger and DeVito.
Still at number 12, the British twins.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh,
yeah,
I wish you well. I'm a firm believer in Bob Dylan's life philosophy.
Yeah.
He not busy being born is dying.
Yeah, that's true. I'm getting closer to shooting my age at golf, Rog.
I thought you were going to say, I'm closer to shooting myself, to our other pod, which is the Black Dog today.
The Black Dog. If I can live to 106, I should be able to shoot my age.
Sadder news, David.
Yeah, what?
Downton Abbey.
What, it's over?
Ended.
It's done.
This weekend, six
the end
seasons.
Of the conveyor belt.
Those of you
who've
listened to the pod for many years, it really is many years now, because it's been a while since we talked about it.
Yeah.
But it used to be unclear whether this was a pod about football at one time with a bit of Downton Abbey on, or whether it was really
a Downton Abbey pod with
a tad of football. I mean, going back into the Grantland era, our passion for the show, yours evaporated first, right?
What, for Downton Abbey?
Yeah,
I just couldn't catch up. There was a season that lost me, and I can't remember what happened.
I think the First World War.
It was tough to recover for me after Matthew died.
Yes!
It was just tough.
Yeah, the show then ferreted around for a centrifugal force.
Yeah.
Branson just flat out irritated me.
Also, I love Lady Edith so much. It was just tough to see her just suffer setback after setback after setback.
I mean, my love for Lady Edith meant any time with Lady Mary on the screen was wasted time for me. In my inner heart, David.
Yeah, Lady Mary's not my type.
I mean, Lord Grantham just became too much of a human representation of Arsenal Football Club. Just a traditional power faltering, fumbling for relevance in the face of modernity. I already got my fill of that by watching the football on a Saturday morning. And Bates was such a noxious character.
Bates and Anna, their love story was tough to watch.
Yeah, I just willed him to receive the death penalty, whether he was guilty or not.
And maybe throw an Anna as
Who cares about Jubilee? Kill them both. Kill them both. Oh, the Donald Trump inside all of us. Yeah. And then Mrs. Patmore, I got angry. She deserved rumpy pumpy true love.
Yeah, she deserved more.
Criminal negligence by the script writers. Yeah. I did press on to the end. I kept watching it out of loyalty and habit. Part of me wished the series would go right through to the 1980s.
Yeah.
Would have loved to have seen Thomas agedly encountering flock of seagulls. But it's over,
Such
David.
Such a new romantic.
I've got two quick 30 seconds.
I've got the whole thing saved, by the way. I've watched one episode of this season. So I'm going to watch the whole thing.
You are?
Yeah, I'm going to binge it.
Maybe we should recreate, because I've got two quick comments on the finale. 30 seconds of spoilers for those who didn't watch it.
Are you going to spoil the whole thing right now?
You know what happened.
I don't know what happened.
Well, then shut your ears.
Okay.
They all die. They're all English.
I heard that. I hadn't shut my ears in time.
They all discover they're English.
And they give
themselves.
Up.
Yeah. No.
Okay, go. What happens?
Lady either gets married. Finds happiness.
That just broke my heart.
There's someone for everyone, David.
I was hoping she was from me.
But watching her get married, David, that is the first second I truly realised Leicester City are going to win the Premier League.
Wow.
Because truly going to win.
Good things happening for Lady Edith.
Good things happening to people.
Lady Edith is the Claudio Ranieri.
In a beauty, you win again.
Yeah.
And then a great tweet from @wedge615. Carson, the age of Butler, who reminded me ever more of my father in his just general rigid way of approaching life in every regard. At @wedge615, Carson steps down at the end and gives the house, a changed house, a damaged house perhaps, to Thomas, the evil Thomas who found...
I like Thomas, though. I always liked him.
You know
him.
I love Thomas? Rob James Collier.
Yeah.
Everton fan. Thomas, proper Everton.
I know. That's why you loved him. I loved him before that, or in spite of
that.
What
did you love about him?
I don't know. I just think that there was something... I like people with flaws. You know this. We've spoken about this. I like a flawed human.
You actually said, I like broken people.
No, what I meant... I was just bad. I'm 50 now. I use words badly. What I meant is I like people with flaws.
Yep.
And there was something always likable about him, even when he was evil.
Yep. That he's an Everton fan.
Yeah, that was it. That was the whole thing. Now that Everton are owned by their own oligarch, I don't know how I feel about it.
At @wedge615 tweeted, turning over Butler duties from Carson to Barrow feels a bit like going from Fergie to Moyes. Yeah.
Interesting.
It's going to end badly.
Who's the Van Gaal?
I've got to say, with Downton Abbey going, David.
Yeah.
What is must-watch television for you right now? Because I've been grappling with this.
Well, Billions is the greatest series, I think, maybe in the history of television. I love Billions. I wish it was on 5 days a week like Guiding Light. Maybe if it could be on 7 days a week, 24 hours a day like CNN, I would love it.
I think that's it's not the best show ever.
What they'll say is
that it's the best worst show on television of all time.
What's the difference?
It's
love
like Gossip
that.
Girl at its best, or reading Us Magazine. You know when you flick through Us Magazine, you think, oh, who really likes this? But at the same time,
it's like Shakespeare.
You're completely and utterly hooked.
Billions is like Shakespeare. That is modern William Shakespeare.
When the scenes in Shakespeare where they pitch them out to the lower common masses in the cheap seats to keep them entertained, the more highfalutin stuff.
Well, but it's sort of what he would be writing about. You know, it's about power, it's about rivalries, it's about struggles, the interfamilial crap.
It's really just about the male drive.
Yeah.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, in the most crass and hilarious fashion, wags.
We've actually got
Brian Copperman and David Levine guesting on next week's MIB.
Yeah.
Can't wait, actually, to find out how much of their own personal character they've written into Wags.
Yeah.
Sure, he's based on
both. He uses the word rapacious.
What else,
really
though, David?
Yeah, what else is must-watch?
Peaky Blinders is the one.
You love that.
The show that I adore and actually ache for that next series to hurry up.
Yeah.
I've savoured Elite Squad, the Brazilian TV series created by the guys who went on to make Narcos.
Yeah, I really like Fargo, which you turned me on to.
Fargo too. I'm watching that for the third time.
Yeah, it's really,
so
really good.
Eager for...
I know House of Cards is back. I'm excited to go and watch that.
You are?
Yeah, very excited for House of Cards.
And Broad City, David.
Yeah.
Broad City, that's the show that I wish was on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
They both remind me of you. In many ways. Before we pod, can I just say, Pat Conroy, RIP. One of producer JW's favourite authors.
Really?
Yeah. J-Dubs calls him the poet laureate of military brats everywhere.
Huh.
And it reminded me of the Conroy quote that I've always loved. He said, children of warriors in our country learn the grace and caution that come from a permanent sense of estrangement.
Wow.
Actually, in Pat Conroy's honour, we've chosen the winner of the Raven of the Week. Coming up
the Guinness.
It'll bring a tear to your eye.
Philosopher! Okay, brilliant, Rog. A Prince of Tides. That was Pat Conroy, right? I like that book a lot. Okay, we got a packed show. We're going to break down a North London derby. Spuds versus Gooners. Spuds versus Gooners with very real title implications. We stand at attention and salute the mighty left boot of Riyad Mahrez, which led league leaders Leicester past Watford at Vicarage Road Saturday. And we discuss the mutiny of Bruin aboard the HMS Newcastle, plus MLS opening day. Real! And the US women's national team versus Germany for all the marbles at the She Believes Cup, Rog.
Oh, to the football, Dave. And before we open the can of Guinness,
yeah,
just say, I have never seen a weekend of more stupid red cards ever.
Yeah, I know.
There were just five of them, each one more ridiculous than the next. There were five. Three of the teams who went down to 10 men actually went on to salvage something out of the game. Two of them won the game. And one of them managed to go 2-0 ahead and then cede that lead in the dying moments.
Oh, wonder who that was.
We won't be talking about that
one. Really? That's not in the rundown. Anyway. Okay, crack open your Guinness, Rog. Let's get to the football. Good pouring. Good save, Rog. Very, very good save. I feel like Wags would enjoy Guinness. Cheers. Okay, Rog. We are now 29/38 of the way through the Premier League season. We're coming off a weekend in which good guys turned bad. Juan Mata and James Milner, scapegoats turned heroes. Christian Benteke and Villa turned, well, they're still crap. They didn't turn into anything. Tottenham 2, Arsenal 2. The 178th playing of the North London derby proves as entertaining as it is important. Arsenal took the lead behind a deft Aaron Ramsey 39th minute back heel, only to see Francis Coquelin receive his second yellow card 16 minutes later. Spurs wasted no time in capitalising on the extra man, taking the lead after a 60th minute Toby Alderweireld strike and a 62nd minute Harry Kane goal of the year contender. But in the 76th minute, Alexis Sanchez steered a Hector Bellerin through ball past Hugo Lloris to leave the game knotted at deuces. Spurs stay second, 5 points off Leicester. Arsenal in third, 8 points adrift.
Oh, we should say both teams enter this game as damaged goods, David.
Oh, they did.
Midweek losses. Spurs beaten by an effervescent West Ham. Arsenal managed to lose after being 1-0 up at home against Swansea. At Hwink7 tweeted, Arsenal dropping more threes than Steph Curry. I mean, this promised to be a game akin to a scientific experiment to determine which force is more powerful, peak Arsenal or peak Spursiness. Ultimately, I guess a draw.
They cancelled each other
out
a little bit.
Was the right result when you look at that. But ahead of the game, fascinating to see how much aggro there was on the streets of North London. Scenes of sporadic violence, Dave.
Yeah.
For me, I watched that, like, bleeding Spurs fans, Arsenal fans with kind of blood coming out of their mouth. And I asked myself, what is the difference between these human beings, religiously, geographically, or economically, between these two sets? It's not like they are, you know, there's a religious divide.
Yeah.
Or an economic class divide.
Yeah. Shia and Sunni. No, they are. It's a very, they're very similar people who often live in the same street, many of them in the same house as each other.
I think it's like a hatred born on too much similarity.
Yeah.
It's just too, there's just a shared level of fear and self-loathing that leads to the punches flying.
Yeah.
Big team news. You love this. No Peter Cech. A victim, perhaps, of the most peak Arsenal moment of the season.
Yeah, he injured his calf. Jogging back to his own net after going up for a corner in the Swansea game.
He's going to be
out
for
pretty amazing.
Or 4 weeks. He was replaced by David Ospina, whose comedy howlers against Olympiacos loom large before the game in Arsenal fans' minds. I mean, early on, it wasn't just the violence in the streets. The game was like hand-to-hand urban warfare. 41 tackles flew in the first half, the most since tackles were invented.
Yeah.
Spurs rippled, organised. Arsenal in the midfield, little panic, little unsettled. Ramsey was everywhere, but nowhere of importance. Lamella and Rose charging through any crevice they could find as Per Mertesacker sent out distress signals. His ship was listing in the face of the full-throated Spurs pressing. You could hear his German sphincter tighten. His Schleichmuskel.
Yeah. Tottenham, they have this ability. Their lines are all connected so well. Lloris connects so well with his defence, the defence so well with midfield, midfield up front. They just merge together as a sort of collective amoeba, better than any other team in the Premier League.
And Arsenal played flinching football, product of so many players just going cold in front of goal at the same time. Sanchez, Ramsey, on the bench, Giroud and Theo. And they've almost created a shared fear that becomes smotheringly all-pervasive. Though the fear about Ospina soon proven to be unfounded. Great save
Very good.
From Lamella, one of nine, the most for an Arsenal goalie since Fabianski in 2009. Game then moved into a second phase, the one that commentators like to refer to as finally poised, with Danny Welbeck being a willing outlet for Arsenal.
Yeah.
And then the goal.
Yeah. Welbeck's been good since he came back, Rog. There's no doubt about it. But the goal, Rog, what a beautiful move. Welbeck on the left sends it over. Great ball to Bellerin. I thought it was a chasse at first, I must admit. And then when I looked at it again, it was a brilliant pass into Ramsey. And that back heel, fantastic finish.
Oh, it was an exquisitely crafted goal. It reminded me of goals passed from Arsenal, Dave. Yeah. Fluent, confident, ecstatic. Used to be their trademark, flickering through to the present. And those Arsenal fans, they just could not believe the feelings they were experiencing. Vaguely known to other fans as happiness, at Mark Busquets said, "We understand it well. It's the feeling that comes just before soul-crushing misery. How prescient he proved to be." I've got a question, Davo. There's a tiresome myth about Aaron Ramsey goals that every time he scores, a celebrity dies. How many does he have to net before Piers Morgan gets it?
A lot more. A lot more. We're all praying for Aaron Ramsey goals.
Keep it up, Aaron.
Yeah, keep it up.
Keep shooting. Keep scoring. Not to sound like Joe Hart.
Shoot from anywhere.
Keep
shooting from anywhere.
Keep scoring, Aaron.
Yeah.
Oh, second half. Really, when they came on, you thought this is going to be a test of everything that Spurs believe in, everything Spurs stand for. Instead, it was Arsenal-ish behaviour that really dictated the pattern of play.
Spurs got a major hand from Francis Coquelin, Rog. The first yellow card, inconceivable enough. Yeah. You know, you must say, when Arsenal players handball, you remember Oxlade-Chamberlain saving handball of a goal that was going wide against Chelsea a couple of seasons ago. This handball was like, there's been a lot of doubt about exactly what the handball is. What is a handball? But this was about as handball as you get. He saves it for no reason by the sideline, handles it with both hands. Yellow card immediately.
And you thought that might come back to haunt him.
He tries to, you know, it's amazing. The commentators watched a little bit too much slow motion here, and they sort of felt that Harry Kane might have lulled Coquelin into that challenge. Harry Kane's just trying to bring the ball under control down the sideline. Coquelin lunges into him so late. Kane could do nothing to avoid the challenge. Bam, immediate, second yellow card.
Apply your nipple clamps, Arsenal fan. The thing I admire about Arsenal is the creativity and just the tirelessness that they bring to finding new ways to self-sabotage in massive games, offering delicious assists that inevitably lead to their own self-destruction. After that, Davo, it was just Spurs, sharks, blood, water. Ospina repelled Harry Kane immediately from close range. I applaud the Colombian. No one is better at goalkeeping from deep inside his own net.
Yeah.
Goal line technology proved by the slightest of margins, kind of the same margins by which Arsenal fans still believe they're going to win the Premier League, that it wasn't a goal, but the inevitable then happened.
Yes, Rog, from the Ericsson corner, the ball falls to Alderweireld, and he finishes it.
Peaky Blinders, Arthur Shelby. The question then became, could Arsenal keep Spurs crushing momentum at bay? They were brave. They were courageous. But 1 minute, 58 seconds later.
I know. Harry Kane, Rog, what a fantastic goal that was.
Spursgasm. It started with the flick. Spursgasm.
The flick from Dele Alli was beautiful. You just don't see English people do this. He did a flick. He actually had the imagination to chase down the ball and flick it. It fell to Harry Kane. Harry Kane cut inside. Opens up his body, Rog, in a way that we're not... You know, most English people couldn't even open up their body like that. He opens up his body. That was enough.
You can put these views from that.
He already had
no
me.
Idea.
He already had me at opening up his body. And then he finished it, put some curl on it, started it outside the goal, and it went in. English people, Beckham occasionally used to hit them in like that from a set piece when the ball wasn't moving. I don't think we've seen an Englishman do that open up his body, moving ball, started outside the goal, curl it in.
With people watching.
I mean, the F2 guys, do it on AstroTurf with no other players playing and a sort of a, you know, some friend of theirs in goal not trying to save it. But we've not seen any English player do that in real live action in a real game ever.
The greatest tribute to that goal was that even though an Englishman struck it, normally when an Englishman strikes that, the commentators say, well, did he mean it? Was it a cross or was it a shot? I think Harry Kane was a bit lucky there. I think he was just trying to pop it in on gut. No one doubted it for a second.
You're right, he intended
that
it.
Is how wonderful it was. The burden of proof is always on the English goal scorer and he passed it clinically.
He did. Amazing, amazing. Oh.
Translucent mask for exhibitionist superheroes who know they're going to score a wonder goal and want to make sure that the whole world knows Clark Kent.
I don't think that
Superman.
Was a mask. I think those were swimming goggles.
I don't quite understand.
I think he kept them from primary
school. I don't understand what knock that is going to protect any part of his face from, to be candid.
It's not as in case he has to go swimming right after the game.
But we said on the show, to do that as a footballer is unbelievable. Yeah. To do it as an Englishman is even more unbelievable.
You've got to get rid of the shackles
to
before
strike
you open
the ball,
up your body.
The mental shackles. Oh. Born of 6 decades of post-war decline and just the dismembering of your empire. Yeah. To take the field with that on your mind, Davo, still be able to do that. That kind of Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, horse McDonald's commercial shot, Davo.
Yeah.
The thing I loved most about it was his celebration.
Yeah.
He just showed the ebullience of a man who still loves football with the same passion he experienced as a kid playing in the streets.
Right.
We should have smashed that joy out of him years ago.
Yeah, I know. How did he manage to keep that?
I'm sure tabloid newspapers are having an inquest
What kind of a school did he go to where they didn't knock that out of him, Rog?
You had his joy, Davo.
Yeah.
And then on the sideline, cameras cut to poor Arsene Wenger. The pain of Kane falls mainly on Arsene.
Yeah.
Watching him collapse his head into his hands on the sideline, David, like a condemned man receiving a death sentence.
Yeah, the English.
Oh, how did he? I just, my heart broke for him. I know Arsenal fans are probably like, I've told him, he's got to go. But as a human being, I felt terrible for him. And then I started to wonder, how do you fire Arsene Wenger? How do you fire a man who's...
You can't fire him.
You can't fire
him. You can't. He's unfireable.
I don't think you can fire him.
Yeah.
They talk about maybe invite him to leave is the phrase at season's
end.
Because
they'll play again next game and they'll be unstoppable and they'll be amazing.
Here's what I think you have to do, Arsenal fans.
Yeah.
You really do want him to go. There's a lot of you now. You see no progress. You see the big games repeating. Snow falling, snow on snow.
Yeah, on snow.
You need to look at history.
Uh-huh.
You need to look at Stalin.
Uh-huh.
Put a pillow over his face and announce he died of natural causes.
Henry VIII.
Lenin. Poison / natural death.
Yeah.
In his sleep.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Henry VIII.
Yeah. Divorced, beheaded, died. Divorced, beheaded, survived.
Yep. Beheaded Andrei
Arshavin.
Would
be the option.
Beheaded Arshavin. What we're saying is, Arsenal fans, some leaders are simply too great and their deeds too seismic to merely step down on their own.
Yeah.
They might need the kind of assist that only Mesut Ozil can provide.
Are we honestly condoning that somebody murders Arsene Wenger?
Didn't say that.
Okay, good.
Didn't say that,
We wouldn't condone that. But we are saying that he wouldn't leave of his own accord.
Yep. That's inciting. If that's not inciting violence, I don't know what is. I think bully, if he's listening, is going to up and off him. The heavens opened.
Yeah.
Oh, that shot of a deluge above White Hart Lane. It looks as if the field was being soaked by the tears of generations of Arsenal fans up there in heaven.
Yeah.
Those 2 minutes, Davo, just pure Spurs porn. Had the team held on, Davo, those 2 minutes would have ranked up there amongst the best 2 minutes in Spurs history, in Spurs fans' lives, essentially. But then Arsenal threw caution to the wind. They just summoned a desperate desire, a character that's been all too absent.
Arsenal, I always feel, play better when the pressure isn't on them. And in some ways, the pressure was off them at that point because they were expected to lose. They weren't expected. It would have been okay down to 10 men for them to have lost it. They always seem to play their best football when the pressure isn't on them. And they came back into the game because they have players of great individual skill. They have players with telepathic ability to communicate with each other and do beautiful things with a football, Rog.
Alexis Sanchez, his first goal in 11 games. Hold me closer, tiny dancer.
Yeah.
Lay me down in sheets of what, Davo?
Lemon.
Yeah, lemon.
Yeah.
It's got to be lemon. It can't be linen.
It's not linen. That wouldn't make any sense. Who would want to lie in sheets of linen?
Scratchy sheets.
When you can...
Scratchy sheets.
Yeah, no, I want the scent of lemon.
Yeah, the sweetest of dreams. Guaranteed, Elton John.
Yeah.
Crap goal. conceded by a defence that up to then had been harder to unlock than an Apple iPhone.
Yeah, it's almost like it was like the free kick that bumbles under the wall. It was like he hit it so slowly that Lloris had already finished his dive and was picking himself up off the floor when it went past him.
It's like an off-speed pitch.
Exactly.
The dashing and mighty Lloris, what they call in French, un feu pas.
Yeah.
Significant strike, though, for Sanchez, for Arsenal, for Arsenal fans, crushed by the weight of narrative. They're chokers. They're self-sabotagers. They are mentally weak. But to come back and find a way to grind out a crucial goal, Davey, in this big game against their biggest geographical rivals, Davey, and then to find a way to come back and grind out a crucial goal. To access a reserve of resistance, potency and courage we don't associate with them at all.
Yeah, but I don't know, how crucial was it? Well, I guess we'll see. How crucial was the goal? How crucial was 1 point in this game, you know, for either team, but especially for Arsenal,
It was a bit Cruz Rubio. Shouldn't one of them have done the decent thing and drop out the race so they could catch up with Leicester?
No, exactly.
At Churnit Things tweeted, when the second Arsenal goal went in, I thought, that's so Arsenal-y for Spurs. Then realised it was actually quite Spursy. I mean, when that goal in, Dave, I thought happiness is but a fleeting emotion in an Arsenal fan's life. I bet Arsenal fans were momentarily ecstatic. But the second that goal hit the back of the net, they probably realised, oh my God, now we've got something to lose. And the fear kicked right back in.
Yeah, Arsenal's title to lose. But they don't enjoy it.
From then on, it was all Arsenal. Yeah. Even though they had 10 men, they were charging forward with belief. Yeah. Arsenal fans sung, top of the league and you f***ed it up.
Yeah.
Did Spurs choke or did they simply run out of gas?
Tough to know. I mean, look, I think the end of this season, we're really going to know whether, you know, Pochettino's, you know, fitness regimen that he has these players working through is going to exhaust them. They did seem to tire a little bit at the end of this game, but there are also some knocks on that team all over the park. You know, Dele Alli still seems to be carrying some kind of an injury.
Mentally weak or physically tiring, either scenario would be disconcerting to me if I was a Spurs fan, especially with a tasty, tasty Europa League clash Thursday against Dortmund, the equivalent of European football shipping or fan fiction. It's football as if derived from the desire for two fictional characters to be in a romantic relationship together. Oh, Dortmund, Spurs, sexy, sexy stuff. Mm-hmm. Complete opposite of Liverpool United, which is the equivalent of being forced to watch Rupert Murdoch and Jerry Hall doing it. both teams had a chance to win it late on. Gabriel sliced the ball over his own net. Vimmer denied Ramsey with a last-ditch tackle. It ended 2-2, which made it official. Arsenal and Spurs, the worst fox catchers since John Dupont.
OK, Rog, let's talk about the leaders. Watford 0, Leicester 1. The Leicester bandwagon rolls through Vicarage Road, and they collect all 3 points behind a 56th-minute curling blast. Another great goal, Rog, from Riyad Mahrez. Or rather, from Riyad Mahrez's left foot, if you see that as being a separate being. It's the Algerians' 15th goal of the season. Leicester now 5 points clear at the top. 9 games to go.
Oh, Leicester City fast replacing St. Jude as the patron saint of lost causes to pray to. Now, the game set off at a blistering pace. Both teams charge at each other with intensity. Jamie Vardy, evermore the product of a forbidden feral love between a man and a sewer rat. Chance after chance, David.
Yeah, certainly. Set up by Albrighton again and again and again. You know, he's got such speed, Rog. He finds space behind defenders. I don't think Watford's back line are the quickest, but he gets those opportunities. Those goals, though, were going in earlier this season, Rog.
And Watford suddenly also dead in front of goal. Mm. They toil without evidencing a real belief they could score. Goals have dried up for Igalo and Troy Deeney. Fat Drake.
Yeah.
They've now failed to score in 7 of their last 9 Premier League matches together.
Yeah.
Leicester frustrated, but a double change at halftime changed the game again. Second weekend in the run.
Andy King and Schlupp come on, Rog, and seem to inject Leicester with that little bit of something.
I mean, their weakness was meant to be the lack of depth, Leicester. But it's fascinating. For the second week on a Schlupp in particular, fantastic.
Yeah.
Potency when he comes on. He's definitely in my top five, David.
Yeah,
and within 11 minutes, they've taken the lead.
Yep, 56th minute. Riyad Mahrez, Rog, that left foot. I mean, that left foot is just tasty.
Is it? It's left foot.
It's tasty.
Or is it a scimitar of truth?
Well, it's also that.
Because it's the kind of goal.
It's a left scimitar of truth rather than a right one.
It makes you wonder why he doesn't do that all the time, David.
I know. Well, you can't unleash your scimitar of truth all the time.
Yeah.
There's not that much truth.
You sound like I'm talking to Yaya Toure. He says the same.
I know. I've only got a minute and a half a game.
I've got a reserve of scimitar of truth. Q Delirium.
Yeah.
A group of geology students at the University of Leicester have stuck earthquake detecting equipment right by the ground.
Yeah.
And they've been monitoring the seismic activity when Leicester score.
Uh-huh.
They said it's on the Richter scale. It measures the same as a 0.3 magnitude earthquake. Uh-huh. A close look showed this is a strong correlation between the exact time Leicester scored and the occurrence of the large seismic signals.
People of Britain, these are your tax dollars at work.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
I imagine them being like the Ghostbusters team, just part right.
Don't cross the streams. Don't cross the streams.
Oh, Leicester City, Davo.
Yeah.
Have won 31 points away from home this season in the Premier League. Five more now than any other team. At S House 12, Leicester's lead over the second place team is now 5 points, the exact same as Bayern Munich's. What is this world twisted?
Yeah.
He says they are now 9 games from an unfathomable glory.
Yeah, would be amazing.
The league position of their remaining opponents, 19th. 15th, 8th, 17th, 5th, 16th, 6th, 11th and 10th, i.e. mostly pretty crap.
Yeah, Chelsea on the last day of the season talking about pretty crap.
Oh, they are a story that has made me rethink my position on unicorns, crocks of gold at the end of rainbows, and mostly, shocking of all, Claudio Ranieri's day.
Yeah, good for him. So happy for that man.
At Rue 41013 says, in sports history, a Leicester City title this year would only compare with when Babe the Pig won the national sheepdog competition.
that was a big moment in sports history.
No, it's almost as big as that.
Yeah, no, especially in a week where the Lakers beat the Golden State Warriors. People say it's the biggest upset that's ever happened in sports. It's like, you know, watch some Premier League football.
Just tell
season.
Lakers fans these three words. Babe the Pig.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Rod, they go 5 points clear at the top. Tottenham and Arsenal following. The team with the game in hand, though, Rod, Man City. They hosted Aston Villa. They beat them 4-0. And a rather routine win. Goals from Yaya Toure, Raz, Rod, and two from Sergio Aguero. See City stay fourth. Just 10 points off Leicester. They got a game in hand.
The embers of City's title challenge still burning. No win, though, against the current top eight so far this season.
Hmm.
That did not bother them, because this week they were playing Aston Villa.
Yeah.
And although City were completely dead inside midweek against Liverpool, they're always ready to dispense bare-bottom spankings against the weak and feeble, which Aston Villa certainly are, David.
Yeah. First half, though, they showed a little bit of resistance.
Well, one person in particular.
Step up, Sir Bradley Guzan.
Oh. Reclaiming his place just in time to be on the end of a mauling. 4-0, yet he played with courage and actually had a fantastic game of football. First half, he was amazing. And then he realised the things he was saving the ball with were his hands.
Exactly.
And those hands were attached to his body. And then he panicked a little.
Yeah, they're not scimitars of truth.
Oh, Villa's veteran, Micah Richards, who actually played at City between 2005 and 2015, was Manchester City's key playmaker.
Yeah.
One-man defensive disaster. He just changed the game with a series of half-hearted defensive efforts, lapses of concentration, as Villa essentially adopted the position and decided to treat this as a training game. 4-0, and even Raz scored.
Yeah.
Little Raheem Sterling, when he netted at the far post and then looked at the cameras, I'm sweary-mouthed. How bad a Villa? Even I scored.
Really? Interesting. We'll go and check the tapes.
Money on it.
Okay, another shock result of the weekend, Rog, but maybe not. West Brom 1, Man United 0. In what those following the game on Twitter must have thought was a case of mistaken identity. Juan Mata. Rod, Juan Mata was sent off in the 26th minute for back-to-back yellow cards. The Baggies capitalise on the extra man in the 66th minute. I love that minute. With Solomon Rondon thrusting the winner past David De Gea. United fall into sixth, 3 points off the top four. West Brom in real form, Rod.
Yeah, I mean, although entering this game to give United their full name, they were actually hottest team in football, Man United. LVG's team had seen off Shrewsbury.
Yes. Michelin,
Arsenal,
exactly.
And Watford, small teams all. Although over the past month, this has become not your father's West Bromwich Albion, David.
Yeah, they're still crap. Yeah. But they're beating other teams with their crap.
Well, for Tony Pulis, this is a high-octane, free-scoring, powerful and direct football team, David, by his standards. And in the early exchanges, I mean, they really did drive United back. And then the game changed on a moment for which I'm just hoping, I mean, the Juan Mata red card, I'm hoping that Serial do a podcast investigation into how the heck this happened. Yeah. It just seems, I mean, just even now, even though we watched it with our own eyes, I cannot imagine how Juan Mata...
He blocked a free kick, got a stupid yellow card.
The cutest red card of all time.
He blocked a free kick, got one yellow card.
Yeah.
And then just a few minutes later...
2.5 minutes.
Yeah, ends up...
turning Ewok Enforcer, flying into Darren Fletcher.
Yeah.
I mean, it will be lost to history. What went through Juan Mata's mind as he swung out wildly and kicked so petulantly?
I don't think he liked it when Louis van Gaal used the word horny in a press conference in front of him. I think he's traumatised. Honestly, I think he's traumatised by that. I would be.
It's the trauma speaking. Yeah. But I've got to say, even in his defence, when he committed acts of smurfish violence, he just remains adorable. Mm. I said on the show, watching Juan Mata trudge off the field.
It was an adorable walk off the field.
It was the saddest, most adorable demise since Bing Bong faded away and Inside Out.
Similar.
Who's your friend who likes to play? Bing Bong, Bing Bong. His rocket makes you yell hooray. Yeah. Bing Bong. It really teared.
Love
tears.
Bing Bong.
He's such a gorgeous man. As gorgeous as he is, LVG's argument post-game was ridiculous.
that you should take into account who the man is and what a good guy he is before you send him off.
Yeah, the referee has to know the person doing it. And yeah, I don't think Mata's ever had bad tackles or something like that. It's ridiculous to send him off.
Yeah, but Judge Ivor would have done that before sentencing Rog.
My father probably would have hung all professional football players without any trial.
Yeah.
But arguing the referee should not send off a player for his actions because he seems to have a sweet persona. It's just totally bonkers. West Brom pounced.
Yeah.
Rondon.
Yeah.
Sin Pierre Dad on David De Gea.
Go Venezuela.
4 goals in 6 league games for the hunky.
Yeah.
He is a hunky Venezuelan.
He is, he's large.
I bet you Raheem Sterling, that's where he got his idea for a haircut, for that real man. But it was game over. United had loads of ball, but they then played as if the nets were on the side of the field. Just one shot on goal. Odd tactical decisions that compounded the defeat in many fans' eyes. Herrera off for Schneidlin. And I guess the salt in the gaping septic wound for United is that the brains of the West Brom team, United cast-off, Darren Fletcher, had a fantastic game, 32 years old, free transfer, and he commands his team with an intelligence, a rugged intelligence born of the kind of experience that this United side crave. LVG narrative flips once more. He's destroying United! No, he's weaving his philosophy into the club by playing the kids. And now we revert to, he's destroying Manchester United! And the Europa League crap-off against Liverpool now looms. 3 wins in a row for West Brom. Their first against United in the Premier League era at home.
Wow.
Mazel tov.
Can't wait.
TP.
Rog. So, Man United in 6th place. Just behind them in 7th, Liverpool, who visited Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace 1, Liverpool 2. Benteke, Rog. Benteke came off the bench. He won a stoppage time penalty. And he coolly slotted it past Palace goalkeeper Alex McCarthy. He made a horrible howler in this game, Rog. Liverpool move up into 7th place. Palace, though, they drop to 15th. Oh, how
I'm
far
falling.
They have fallen. Dangerously close to a game of relegation Rochambeau.
What a game. Liverpool end a near 2-decade wait for glory at Selhurst Park. Didn't look like it early on. They conceded a goal from a corner. Conceding goals from corners appears more deadly than giving away a penalty for Jurgen Klopp's eye.
Yeah.
And then James Milner sent off for acting like Juan Mata in public.
Yeah.
Why is it that this weekend was just a dreadful one for people with the initials JM?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Have you been in touch with Jenny McCarthy?
I have not.
I'm worried for John Mayer.
Yeah.
Not for Joseph Mengele.
Yeah.
I hope he had a terrible weekend.
Yeah.
And I know
how
he listens
to this.
How
about Jose Mourinho?
No comment.
Yeah.
But as potent as Palace had been in the first half, where Balassi and even Adebayor are threatened, the second Alex McCarthy rolled the clearance straight to the feet of Roberto Firmino.
Yeah.
10 goals he's been involved in 2016, quietly more than anybody else in the league. Just a total panic overwhelmed the side.
And then stoppage time, 90th minute, plus 4. Terrible challenge by Damien Delaney in his own penalty area. Brings down Benteke. Benteke steps up to the spot, slots it past, 2-1, heartbreak in South London.
Yeah, well, Jurgen Klopp had sent on the lumbering Christian Benteke, even though he'd had Daniel Sturridge on his bench, yeah. And you wondered why. He then charged at Delaney, brutal for him, he'd had a fantastic game. Celtic war chariot, just exhausted at the end, clipped him with his knee, down went Benteke. A man who hadn't scored in 750 minutes of football. He'd been the Cal Ripken of not scoring. Mm. And it was him who I thought was very courageous, to be candid, scoring a critical penalty. Palace, 3-4, not won in the last 12 games. Three straight wins for Liverpool. Jurgen Klopp's team making a late charge for Europa qualification glory.
Okay, Rog, sorry to do this to you. Everton 2, West Ham 3. Slaven Bilic's side puts 3 past Everton in the final 12 minutes to walk out of Goodison with vivid dreams of the Champions League. The Irons are only 1 point off Manchester City, although, as we said earlier, City have played one fewer game.
What do you want to talk about?
Would you want to just talk about the first 2 goals, then we'll stop after Lukaku gets declare the penalty?
Declare victory.
We don't have to talk about West Ham getting 3.
I just say, it doesn't bother, this game didn't bother me.
Yes, it did.
No, it didn't.
It did. We've spoken about this. You said you were numb, and then you admitted it did hurt.
It no longer hurts anymore.
Oh, we're back to it not hurting.
I'm too numb.
You're numb again.
Too numb.
Okay, just trying to keep up.
Do you know when you've got like near fatal frostbite?
Yeah.
And you can hack off your fingers.
Yeah.
And you don't feel anything because you've long stopped having any sense of
it. Done it several times.
That's how I feel, mate.
Yeah.
That's how I feel today. Mm. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. This was the first home game of a new era.
Yeah.
Big money.
Uh-huh.
Bright future.
Yeah.
Everton fans spent much of the pre-game screaming, "We are effing rich. We are effing rich."
Yeah. It was better when you didn't have any money.
We were brilliant. Swagger. Work rate. West Ham on the back foot. Lukaku rolled off Reece Oxford as if he was a 17-year-old boy.
He is.
Yeah. And I thought, please let us pray Lukaku likes the smell of Iranian Real. I want him to stay so badly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had Kevin Morales, speedy 2 yellows, complete moment of idiocy. A player who's been on the bench so much this season. It's twice now in 15 games he's run on and immediately got himself sent off.
Ugh.
I think he got sent off once in his first 88 games.
Mm.
But it's like this pent-up frustration. That's what gets released as soon as he runs on rather than actually playing football. Down to 10 men, though. No problem. West Ham was strangely listless after their midweek endeavours against Spurs. And it was Spurs ex-player, Aaron Lennon. Born again, Aaron Lennon.
Yeah.
He is risen.
JC is awesome.
And I said to myself, nothing can go wrong now.
Uh-huh.
Everton just storming forward. What do we do next?
Well, you get a penalty, Rog.
Let's just stop the game right now.
I know. Let's go 3-0 up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet...
we didn't. Adrian, fantastic. Yeah, slightly off his line when he...
like every goalkeeper who saved every penalty in the Premier League this season.
But it was like, you know, the Goodfellas Scorsese trick of freezing something right there and having V out.
Yeah.
If you had it, the second Lukaku's penalty was saved, you would stop the game. And my voice would say, it was at this very moment I knew this Everton side wouldn't win the game. The only question left for me at 2-0 up was, would we lose or would we get a point? And you, David, nothing that followed surprised. Not one thing. Not one. There was a Greek character, I can't remember his or her name, and please, if you're listening and you're a Greek scholar, email us.
Yeah.
Who was cursed by the gods by being given the power to foresee the future, which as a kid I thought was an amazing gift, and I couldn't understand how that was a curse.
Yeah.
But the curse was she could foresee her own murder, which if I remember was at the temple. I think somebody threw a net over her and somebody else stabbed her to death with a trident. And this game, Davo,
it's a nasty way to go.
Yeah, she was a terrible way to... nets and tridents, nasty way to go.
If you go to the temple, you want to avoid...
nets.
Nets, and certainly don't take your trident.
Tridents. Yeah, and she was unable to prevent it, which must have been absolutely excruciating. That's how I felt watching. My team was 2-0 up. Yeah, I knew. We're about to be trapped in a net and just slowly stabbed to death by Slaven Bilic.
But you're numb to it. It doesn't even bother you anymore.
Doesn't
not
bother
at all.
Me. I haven't thought about it since.
No, clearly.
All I could do was look on in horror and scream to no effect, David.
Yeah.
Nothing, nothing, nothing.
Yeah.
Everton, all I can say is they're worse than Trump University. Happy for Payet. Scored the winner, the inevitable winner.
Yeah.
In the 90th minute. I'd say measure of revenge. I respect that. He was injured, I think, out for 56 days after the reverse fixture.
Yeah.
And being beaten by such a beautiful player.
Yeah.
I mean... Being beaten by Payet, it's like being Johnny Boz at the beginning of Basic Instinct and being killed while making love to a beautiful person who stabs you in the neck with an ice pick.
You're really clutching onto anything right now to help you get through
this. That's it, David.
Yeah.
Roberto Martinez talked about hard luck, the referee, the timekeeping.
Yeah.
But Everton team led in six games this season, dropped the lead. Six times, 3-3 draw, you remember, against little teams, Bournemouth and Chelsea?
Yeah, I remember that.
Late winners, 4-3 loss against Stoke City in December.
Yeah.
We are not learning from mistakes, we just repeat them.
Yeah.
You could have 10 more points now, which would put us on the brink of Champions League football, which is where this team should be, Davo.
Yeah.
And that's it, the darkness that surrounds a season, which promised a trip to the moon, but delivered only a damp squib and a rocket left on the launch pad.
You got an oligarch now, Rog. Everything's going to be okay. He owns Russian energy companies.
He's Iranian.
It's all good. Yeah. Everything's good, Rog. It's all
Give
good.
Me a hug.
Yeah, I'm completely the opposite, Rog. I am shocked when Chelsea don't win games. I've seen Chelsea be so crap this season, but I still haven't reprogrammed myself to expect the inevitable equaliser in the 85th minute from Diouf. Staffordshire's Barcelona leave Stamford Bridge with a share of the spoils. Diouf's goal cancelled out an absolute thumper by Bertrand Traoré, Rog. He started in place of the slightly injured Diego Costa, probably more likely being rested for the Champions League fixture against PSG. Chelsea, wonderful goal from Traoré. That was really something sensational.
3 feet high and rising.
Yeah, he's scoring a lot of goals.
Four
he
in his
like
last five.
He looks like a real prospect.
Yeah, he's the best thing out of Burkina Faso since Cashew Nuts.
Yeah.
But Stoke kept coming and coming.
Yeah. They're such a good team. I got to tell you, the play of Gianelli Imbula, I've rarely been more blown away by a performance at Stamford Bridge by a midfielder than this young man. He's one for
Did
the future.
Did you covet him, Precious?
Oh, I coveted him. I can't believe that Chelsea didn't get him. He is fantastic, Rog.
At Neon Ribald said, they've been trumped by other feel-good stories, but Stoke and Mark Hughes deserve credit. They took castaways and made it work, unlike the QPR raisins. There is something remarkable at the heart of this Stoke story.
Yeah,
they
really.
Paid top dollar for defective blue-chip European talent, but they've been able to motivate them to actually play with passion as opposed to just draw a paycheck and drag the team down.
You know, what I was thinking about as I was watching them is that Mark Hughes, former Chelsea striker, still beloved at Chelsea, Mark Hughes.
And a bit of a chip on his shoulder.
Definitely, but he's still beloved there. But he's actually built a team that's a little bit like good Chelsea, formerly good Chelsea. They had incredible steel. Stoke have always played really hard, you know, spineful football.
Spineful.
Down the centre. What he's now fused is that skill on top of it, which was the secret of Chelsea's success for season after season after season under Mourinho. And really, they are fun to watch. Shaqiri, Boyan, and Arnautovic, Imbula, they've got players of such skill and ability backed up by the steel all over the park. Love watching them play football.
One of my favourite stories of the week. Chelsea captain John Terry has revealed that the Blues first team have a ritual before games.
Yeah.
Of the players all using the same urinal in the dressing room.
Yeah.
It's a news story.
Yeah.
Trying to get objective confirmation that urinal is not actually Matt Miazga's locker.
Yeah, it's also quite likely that that is the only urinal in the locker room. This is England we're talking about, Rog. There's no choice.
Land of tiny urinals.
Without a doubt. Southampton 1, Sunderland 1. Big Sam's post-game pie goes from celebratory to conciliatory in the 93rd minute when 17th century painter / Premier League centre-back Virgil van Dijk slammed home the tying goal for Southampton. Sunderland remain just 1 point clear of the drop zone, Rog.
Yeah, and Sunderland, a club enmeshed in a whole lot of darkness, came out this week that the club's chief executive is facing allegations. She knew that Adam Johnson had abused a 15-year-old fan, but allowed him to stay on and play at the club. Johnson currently awaiting sentencing for the crime. A further grim blot on the copybook of the club run by American financier Ellis Short.
Swansea 1, Norwich 0, a second-half goal from Urbane Icelander Giffy Sigurdsson proves the difference in an otherwise agricultural affair. Norwich remain mired in 18th. Swansea move 9 points clear of the drop.
Yeah, I mean, two things on this that were interesting. Credit to Swansea's Italian manager, Guidolin.
Yeah.
Who was actually hospitalised with a chest infection ahead of this game.
No.
But he's quietly put together a life-saving record for this club.
Yeah, two big wins in the last few days. The Arsenal won in midweek, particularly notable.
He was named manager Jan 18th. Swansea, 22 points. They now have 33 and are 9 points safely above the relegation zone. That man has saved Welsh lives. But at the game, it was fascinating. Who was in the stands?
The new president of FIFA.
Potent, powerballed.
Infantino.
Johnny Baby.
Friend of Troidini.
He comes into town to experience firsthand what football looks like without all the corruption.
Mm.
And it wasn't very good.
Yeah.
English papers delighted in noting Infantino. Flew into town on an EasyJet, which is, I guess, European Airlines version. How would you describe Greyhound bus?
Yeah, pretty similar.
Eager to show his common touch and that the new FIFA is the opposite of old FIFA.
Except inside that EasyJet, it's probably gold-plated. It looks like a Learjet inside, like a Gulfstream.
Yeah, that's an improvement though, David, because Sepp Blatter would have just flown in on his Gulfstream and strafed the villagers upon his arrival just for laughs.
Yeah, on his dragon.
Make
he would
another
have come
pass.
In.
We'll strafe them.
Newcastle 1. Talking of strafed villagers, Rog. Newcastle 1, Bournemouth 3. The darkness in Newcastle is no longer confined to the 20 hours a day sans sunlight. One day after a press conference bust up with a journalist, it's an amazing piece of video, Steve McLaren sees his side fall at home to Bournemouth. Darkness. Newcastle sit in 19th place, 1 point from safety. They do have a game in hand on those around them.
They do have a game in hand to lose. Who would be an English Premier League manager? I mean, however bad your week has been, dear listener, just thank God that you are not Steve McLaren, a man whose the least of his problems is the hair island, by which he will be remembered.
Yeah, love
I'm sure
that hair
producer
island.
Jay Dubs is already producing his obituary video for the next week, Men in Blazers show.
That's good.
His weekend started by being chased out of a press conference by an extremely rabidly angry English journalist who waddled after him at the back door of the press room bellowing, "Walk away, Steve, smile and grin again. He's been out of his depth since the minute he walked in."
But the best thing about it is he keeps on opening and closing the door.
And hurling more insults, thinking he's finished.
Keeps on thinking. No, he keeps on thinking, I really shouldn't be doing this. I really, but I just can't help myself.
Shutting the door and then opening
it again. I've got to open it again and do it.
It was amazing. And all I can say is, it would get worse for Steve McLaren against the Fuchsia Cherries, battered by Bournemouth. Brave Bournemouth. Fantastic Bournemouth. Can we now announce they are probably, please God, safe from relegation.
Oh, I hope.
Newcastle, though,
don't curse them, though, Rog. Don't curse them.
24 points from 28 games, the lowest in Premier League history. Massive games await for Newcastle against Leicester City on Monday and then against dread rivals Sunderland the week after as they compete in a mini league at the bottom of the table consisting of Norwich City, Sunderland and the Cleveland Browns. Good news, though, they remain just 1 point from safety. Bad news, they've got little to no hope after Steve McLaren. Nigel Pearson, Rafa Benitez or David Moyes may well be the new manager by the time they next play. I'm praying they bring back John Carver. I loved his work.
Oh, we'll see, Rog. Okay, MLS, Rog.
Bum, bum, bum. We need a jingle. Can you explain what you're doing when you make that noise?
I'm doing that guitar slide.
Yeah.
I've got MLS fever.
Yeah.
I love it, Rog. It began its 21st season. So American. It began its 21st hard rock music from Alexi Lalas. It began its 21st season this Sunday with a rematch.
Slap bass.
Of last year. Boop, 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 boop. Perhaps some syndromes. Rematch of last year's final. Mike McGee celebrated his return to LA.
We should get a jingle
LA
just for the MLS portion of the show.
We should get Alexi to write it.
Listeners. And by listeners, I mean Killer Diggins.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to write
we need it to be super American.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah, it'd be so good. Mike McGee, Rog, he celebrated his return to LA in style in Chicago. NYCFC combining for a touchdown's worth of goals, extra points included.
Well, the season really began with the CONCACAF Champions League. That annual gauntlet of pain.
Yeah, forget about that.
Pre-season. Yeah, it didn't happen. It did happen. I mean, pre-season MLS teams being mowed down by Liga MX clubs in fine season form is just utterly meshuggah. MLS have lost 4 out of 15 knockout stages to the clubs. I mean, rationally, the calendar is a partial, almost complete explanation. Look at the difference between Premier League clubs in pre-season, NFL teams in pre-season, and look who gets to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You also got the depth of roster. Just the DPs, the lack of quality of non-DPs also a factor. Whatever the reasons, just the optics the week before the season kicks off to have a stink on their doorstep, however rational it may be to explain away, is the worst possible way to start the MLS season. I thought it was great to have MLS back. EPL all morning, MLS in the afternoon, you call it
MLS fever. Real! Wow.
I got the fever. But yeah. No Kaká, no Drogba, no Lampard in week one.
Yeah.
Despite that, all off to a great start. 36 goals, new record for opening weekend.
Yeah.
Orlando coming back from the dead to tie, courtesy of goals in the 94th, 95th minute. Portland repelling Columbus once more in a fantastic game of football. Your NYCFC, Patrick Vieira era has begun, and he coaches in the same style as how last season panned out. All attack, defence not so much. It's all very Carmelo Anthony inspired. Mm. NYCFC's Mick Diskerud, our mate, Tommy McNamara. They opened the season like DPs. Mm. I've got to say this. I adore Tommy McNamara, David.
Yeah, he's a great player.
He looks like a footballer, as if Irving Welsh cast a footballer.
Yeah, he's mulleted.
He looks like Mick Diskerud if he went on a 72-hour bender.
Yeah.
Pie bender.
Yeah, I was blown away by Shelton in this game, Rog. He looks tasty. If he continues to develop as a footballer, he'll be very, very valuable as an international for the Von Trapps. Rog, loved the way he plays.
Talking about the Von Trapps.
Yeah, Rog, the She Believes Cup, the US Women's National Team preparing for what's essentially the title match of the She Believes Cup. Becky Sabrin and co face Germany Wednesday night in Boca Raton.
When I think of football Florida, epicenters, Rog, I think of Boca.
I used to play tennis down there. Jill Ellis's side and Germany have each beaten the Lionesses of England and France, setting up this winner-take-all affair. It's been a good little tournament,
fantastic.
This one, Rog.
For the US, two games, two slightly sluggish performances, bailed out in the first by 23-year-old Crystal Dunn. And in the second by 17-year-old Mallory Pugh, American Dele Alli, who set up Alex Morgan to net a minute into stoppage time. Bright side here, stat and a half. With a victory over France, number three team in the world, the top-ranked Americans improved to 8-0-0 in 2016, outscoring opponents 30-0. I'm sounding like Paul Carr. We've got Megan Rapinoe jumping on the pod special to talk all things US Women's National Team with us this Thursday as she fights back from her torn ACL with the Olympics on the horizon. Send us your questions for Megan, who is one of my heroes on this International Women's Day and every day.
Oh, wonderful, Rog. Okay, this Wednesday night's game is on at 7:45.
On what network?
ESPN 3, Rog. ESPN 3, that's their digital channel.
It's better than 4.
It is better than 4, which doesn't exist. That would be a tough place to watch the game. Okay, our first Raven, Rog, is from Daniel Corin of Peoria, Illinois. This has been a dark week to be an American lover of the European game. What with Americans being at the heart of efforts to create a European Super League.
It's the future.
Watching Americans wade in and tell the world Champions League does not need the likes of Leicester makes me hang my head in shame. The response of European fans, the mockery and condemnation, has been embarrassing. But would the clubs have met with the Americans if they did not take such a possibility seriously?
What a question. This is in regard to those of you who haven't read it.
Yeah.
Relevant Sports, the guys who do the International Champions Cup. GFOP, Charlie Stilettano, has held talks of Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Man City and Manchester United last Tuesday in a London hotel, both about the ICC this season. And also, as he said afterwards, restructuring the Champions League, quote, making it more of a closed-door competition just for the European elite and hinting at an elite European Super League kind of break-off. What do you make of it all, David? Because it's led to an outcry in England.
Well, look, I loathe the anti-Americanism. I loathe it. This isn't about Americans or America or anything about that. It's about progress and the future of the game. And when you get any change, when anything different happens, it's going to ruffle a lot of feathers. That's what happens with progress. And you know what? It's entirely up to the clubs. It's entirely up to them whether or not they want to go and proceed with this and advance these conversations about this league. That's nothing to do with Americans or America. This is a global game. And the fact is that the way this game was set up at the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century, these former clubs going into these competitions and the way they qualify and the way they happen, it is it's archaic. And let's face it, the Champions League hasn't been around for 150 years. The Champions League is a fairly new construction that was arranged itself by a bunch of corrupt bureaucrats in Paris and Switzerland. So let's not like think that we're preserving some kind of ancient institution here. As to whether or not European clubs will ever accept a system in which the domestic competitions essentially don't count because where you finish in them do not give you the ability to qualify for the elite European competitions. I'm not sure that's ever going to happen, or I don't believe it's ready to happen now.
I mean, the fascinating thing is, in America, there's a huge movement for promotion and relegation. If you speak to the owners of English Premier League football teams, almost all of them would like relegation to end now if they're in the Premier League. They look at the American sports model, where there's franchises that are permanent and don't get relegated, as the future. And if you speak to them, they believe that and talk about it all the time. And the reality is, these teams would not have met so publicly with Charlie if they weren't either interested in talking about the issue or being caught on camera talking about the issue to give themselves leverage in conversations with the English Premier League and UEFA down the road. But there should be no shock about the whole thing. Money makes the football world go round. It's what shaped football over the past 20 years. It is what will shape its future. Ultimately, money is football's only rational force. And while Charlie's talking about Leicester City not belonging in the Champions League, at the very second that Leicester City are a darling, he's definitely grabbing the third rail, one could say, on the subway, Dave, in terms of exposing himself and putting out there. Ultimately, money is football's only rational force, even when it's a dark one.
Yeah, I'm not sure I totally believe me. I believe in the free market. I love the free market. But I think the free market isn't only about money. That's not the only rational force. It's also about the choices that these clubs make with their consumer base. And their consumer base is, yes, it's global. It's not just their local people there. But it's more than just money. I think it's about the interest of the clubs. It's about the extent to which domestic competitions are going to matter in the future and the way in which global football is going to be constructed. Who knows where it's going? But it takes people like Charlie, it takes people like Steve Ross, it takes people with radical ideas to go and try and ruffle the feathers of the bureaucrat sitting in France and Switzerland. And I'm happy for anything which does that, Rog. Okay, the winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Sucker, Scribe, Raven of the Week is a US service member we will refer to by his call sign, Heed. I am an active duty naval aviator, and sadly, I have a begrudging tolerance of your crap show. I have been an NFO, the backseat guy, like Goose, flying FA-18F Super Hornets for many years. In my line of work, nothing says more about who one is and where one has been quite like the collection of patches that adorns one's flight jacket. We just can't relate to this, but it's so great and it's so true. Now I feel like nothing because I don't have a flight jacket at 50.
You are
no
nothing.
Patches, got no you, patches we on are, it.
We're just going to return to
dust. I'll
tell
you, Heed, you are my hero. I'm particularly proud of my jacket, which boasts a wide variety of flair, including but not limited to 1,000 flight hours in the FA-18 Super Hornet. Number two, the patch, the name for the patch awarded to graduates of the Navy Fighter Weapons School, also known as Top Gun.
Applause.
Oh, a patch from the top-notch British company Martin Baker, given only to those who have used their ejection seats in an aircraft mishap. Unlike Goose,
what?
I survived my ride.
Heed.
Wow. A patch commemorating the centennial. I also believe you can go to Bremont and you can get a watch for being in that ejector seat, by the way. A patch commemorating the centennial of naval aviation, a silly career in which we try to land planes on a moving ship, sometimes at night. The logo of my beloved Baltimore Orioles.
Bet you Harry Kane can do that.
Additionally, I have patches from service on several aircraft carriers, a few combat deployments, numerous squadrons and air wings, and one patch that I bought in Afghanistan when my aircraft broke down and I spent a few weeks living in Kandahar waiting on a new jet engine. It wasn't that exciting.
Can I just say, Davo,
yeah,
listening to this so far, I'm just like, life can be lived while I've been watching football.
Yeah.
All this football.
Yeah, it's true. What I do not have, however... Well, no, he's protecting our freedoms to make our crap. What I do not have, however, is a Men in Blazers patch. Oh, we do now.
God, the needle just fell off the record.
I know. Rog, I'm sure you're worried that adding the Men in Blazers patch to this jacket would immediately cheapen the rest of my accomplishments.
Yes.
But have no fear. My MIB patch would be sewn on the inside of my jacket. Good. Safely out of view from any senior officers who might choose to demote me for my enjoyment of crap podcasts. It would be in good company, however. The inside of my jacket has many patches referencing off-color jokes, My Little Pony, seriously, and protesting the Navy's crackdown on cursing and drinking. What would Sir Winston think? So the patch would not be alone, nor would it likely be noticed by anyone, to your relief, I'm certain. If you like, and I could not mean this more sincerely, please contact me, and I would be delighted to have you visit my base, show you a Super Hornet up close, and allow Davo to live out his dream of wooing Kelly McGillis to the tune of Berlin, Kenny Loggins, and Jerry Lee Lewis. Rog, please consider finishing up your American citizenship paperwork first.
God.
Oh, fantastic. What an amazing Raven. I mean, number one, a patch is on its way to you right now as we speak. And please send us a picture of the inside of the jacket.
You can't pay for a patch. They are priceless, but few have earned them more than you have, Mr. Heed. When I first read your letter, I was moved both by your words and your service. But when we used to do our Sirius show, David,
yeah.
Do you remember we get a lot of calls from military men and women from Afghanistan and Iraq, and it was always very humbling.
Yeah, and truckers.
Well, just, yeah, the odd trucker. Yeah. Also humbling, different ways.
Yeah.
Thank you for your service. And as I said, we pray that listening to our crap is the only ill-informed decision that you ever make.
Wow.
A patch on his jacket, Davo,
would
be the oddest place for our logo, since that pirate Mike 666 tweeted us a photo of his wrist today. Mm. It's just had the Men in Blazers logo tattooed on it. With GFOP love.
So alarming.
It is.
I know.
I think it might be the worst tattoo ever that's not a tramp stamp or around Arthur Borich's belly button.
Yeah.
You're amazing, Pirate Mike.
But we thank you for your dedication and devotion. Brilliant, Rog. Okay, your weekend looks like this, courtesy of Mini USA. In Premier League action, Norwich City versus Manchester City, Saturday, 7:45 a.m. on NBCSN. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I do not like seeing the green and yellow of Norwich playing against the sky blue of Manchester City. It's just not an attractive look. And at 12:25 p.m. Saturday on Fox Sports 2, it's Everton versus Chelsea, El Blazerico, FA Cup edition, Rog.
On the deuce.
Yeah, brilliant.
With no pre-game show.
Yeah.
That means if Everton gets smashed in an empty forest, does it make it sound?
We'll see, in standard def. And Sunday at 5 p.m. on ESPN, NYCFC's home opener against Toronto, Rog.
Oh, I wish I could go to that.
Okay, an announcement now for an organisation that's near and dear to us, Rog. America Scores is an after-school non-profit that promotes football and poetry.
It's as if I invented a non-profit.
With students at more than 175 public and charter schools across America. Every year, the organisation holds a national poetry slam at which 14 budding Langston Mark Hugheses perform their original work in front of a live audience in New York City. This year's 10th anniversary celebration will be held at the SVA Theatre here in New York City on April 11th. To purchase tickets, make a donation, and find out more about the organisation, visit americascores.org.
Oh, it's a fantastic organisation. I think we may have the winner in the panel room.
And for those of you coming to this year's Golden Blazers, and those of you not coming, Rog, presented by Mini Wednesday, April 6th at 8 p.m. This year's event includes Men in Blazers' first ever Blazer Drive. Bring a blazer suit or sport coat to donate to Hope for the Warriors Transition Services Program, which supports the goals of service members, veterans, and their families as they move from military careers into professional roles. There are many ways to connect to us. One through our Amazon Emporium. Helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon, Fridays, big or small, just click off the Emporium page. Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage, allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What book are you putting in the Emporium this week, Rog?
A book. Empire of Things, How We Became a World of Consumers from the 15th Century to the 21st by Frank Trentman.
That's interesting.
A Cultural History of How Consumerism, a word which comes from the Latin for to waste, shifted over centuries from something that was seen as immoral and sinful to becoming the dominant feature of modern life.
Wow. My parents still see it as sinful.
They do. I mean, it is. It's become a veritable secular religion. Trentman is a professor of history in London. Mm. The book is a monster.
Yeah.
It's over 700 pages, so I'll say it's not for everyone. Mm. But those who are interested in exploring five centuries of conspicuous consumption and are fascinated to have the opportunity to peel back the layers to understand who we are and how we got to be this way should jump on it.
Talking of consumption, Rog, and conspicuous consumption, because I've bought my boy George so many Hot Wheels cars and superhero toys, and because I just moved house and he has whole new places to go and play with said toys, he's put a lot of scratches on the furniture, Rog, a lot of scratches. We've had to have a few talks about where he's allowed to play and which of his toys cause scratches. But I got
Not near the Modigliani.
But I got an amazing set of... How did you know I had a Modigliani? I'm joking, I don't have one. But I bought these amazing set of six assorted furniture repair markers. stained scratch floor pens. I use them on all my wooden furniture, Rog. They take the scratches out. I've even got a white one. Just $6.25. Much better, I would recommend, than buying new furniture. or getting rid of your son.
Turning it away.
Or getting rid of your son. Much more effective. You can now watch entire episodes of our crap TV show on NBC Sports Live Extra, Apple TV and Roku. It's also up on our website, meninblazers.com. Also on meninblazers.com, a place to sign up for our newsletter, The Raven, which we produce with our partner, Guinness.
It's fantastic.
We've got a Spotify account, Rog. It's men_in_blazers.
New release
Blazers.
Coming out this week.
meninblazers.wikispaces.com/. That's it's the wonder of the modern world. You can follow us on Twitter at Men in Blazers, at Rog Bennett.
We're terrible tweeters.
At Embassy Davies. On Instagram, at Men in Blazers, at Embassy_Davies.
We're very ugly.
We've got a Facebook.
We don't do nudies.
Especially with each other's heads on our bodies. We've got a subreddit, meninblazers.reddit.com, maintained by GFOPs. Akshay, Calvin, and Alex. You can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendorpunk Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Living the nightmare.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
To tweet.
Abrigado. Rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight America.
Oh.
Love you, Davey.
I love you, Rog. With the wisdom of a 50-year-old.
You're a grandpa now.